Mark Adams with us. We're going to go exploring as we look for Atlantis, and you're joining us next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Mark, you know, we talked earlier a couple of years ago about Machu Picchu,
sure.
Atlantis. How did you pick these spots? I mean, what makes them so fascinating for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, the great Leonard Nimoy having just passed away, I think it was watching that show In Search Of as a boy that sort of, you know, turned some key in my brain. And there were also those great movies when I was a kid going to Catholic school, like In Search of Historic Jesus, In Search of Noah's Ark, Beyond and Back. You know, this sort of gray area between, accepted science and pure speculation. And like we talked before about, you know, the human mind starts to create stories to explain things. And as a reporter, I've always been drawn to people who are obsessive about things. My first book was actually about America's first great health guru, who was trying to prove that the American Medical Association was a big fraud, and he was anti-vaccination and stuff like that, and actually almost got himself elected senator from Florida. So, you know, when you find the greatest, most obsessive mysteries of all time, like Machu Picchu and Atlantis, and you have an opportunity to sit down and try to unravel these a little bit further, to me, it's just absolutely irresistible.
Well, let me tell you, what you've done as an explorer has been fascinating. I don't think you'd ever trade it in, would you?
You know, it's a great job. I really cannot complain. The idea that you can go out and meet all these fascinating people who've devoted their lives to, you know, decoding these mysteries is just, it's a blessing every day.
Would you ever like to go out and look for Bigfoot or, you know, the Mothman or anything like that?
You know, I mean, Bigfoot is kind of interesting because there is so much material on the Yeti.
Yes.
You know, there's less on Bigfoot, Sasquatch, that sort of thing. But, you know, there are, you know, and this sort of parallels, you know, Atlantis, there are old myths going back about, you know, this creature in the Himalayas. And, you know, it could be worth going back and you know, trying to take a good, long, hard look at that and find out, as anthropologists say, what's the kernel of truth in here? You know, this story was passed down for a reason. And what was that reason, and what can we get out of it?
All right, let's go to the phones here. Let's go to William in Madison, Wisconsin, to get things started. William, take it away.
Yes, great show. I'd like to refer or bring forth an idea, a concept, and I want to ask the author what he thinks about it. There was a Proto-Finno-Ugric tongue that was spoken long ago, probably in North Africa or north of the Black Sea. The term Atlantis may mean Etela Lanten. Etela means south, Lanten west. In other words, it was a great civilization. Atlantis was a great civilization somewhere in the southwest. Egypt, Aika Pitaya, timekeeper. Aika is time, Pitaya is keeper. And lastly, in the 1927 Encyclopedia Britannica, pyramid, the term pyramid. Etiology unknown, but it may mean pyörä, wheel, mitta, measure. The stone pyramid with its shafts was built, not to rot, made out of stone, to measure the rate of flow, motion of time, the zodiac star patterns in the sky. All 12 of them take 25,920 years to make a complete wheel rotation in the night sky, pyramid. So I want to ask the author, is there a possibility that these people who wrote about Atlantis may have spoken some kind of Finno-Ugric tongue long ago? It's a tough question because very few people know Finno-Ugric tongue.
You may be the only one, William. So let's find out. Mark, I don't know.
Hi, William. That's a good question.
He's our resident scholar, by the way.
Well, you know, a lot of people try to look in ancient literature. They try to look for other references to Atlantis by that name. And the interesting thing is that Plato says when Solon came back from Egypt, he said, look, I've changed all the names that I was told and put them into Greek. So whatever the name was of the island that was hit by these earthquakes and floods, unfortunately, the only thing we know is that it was probably not Atlantis because the name was changed. You know, in the Greek etymology of Atlantis, of course, you know, coincides with Atlas, who you know held up the heavens. That's where you get the names of the Atlas Mountains and the Atlantic Ocean and such. So you know, it's you know, ancient linguistics are a fascinating thing, but it's really hard to unravel from this far out.
We have next Brian in Montreal, in Canada, on the international line in Quebec. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. Interesting show. I was wondering if there's any possibility about, I heard a theory that a mid-Atlantic earthquake caused a tsunami that broke through what was then a landlocked Strait of Gibraltar and allowed the Atlantic Ocean to flood into the Mediterranean Sea, which had been at a much lower level until that time. And supposedly, as the story goes, Crete had been a mountain with Atlantis built around its base, but was all flooded with the rising of the Mediterranean. And I also heard that apparently there had been some evidence found of ruins of an advanced civilization at the base of Crete near the Mediterranean floor. Is there any possibility to think of there being any truth to that story?
Hmm. Well, Crete is interesting because it's such an ancient culture.
And something Plato would know about.
Well, he would definitely know about it. You could sail to Crete. There was definitely, exchange going on between Crete and Athens, which was a major port at that time. And Crete, of course, is the location of the Palace of Knossos, where the Minoans, are believed to have been headquartered. The interesting thing about Crete is that I think they found an axe there not long ago that was dated to 100,000 years ago. I mean, it's not an axe like we would use to chop down a tree, but it's an early tool. So there was some sort of development going on in Crete in the Mediterranean long before we've been accustomed to think. The thing about the Mediterranean is, there, as far as I can tell, from what I've read, there was a breach at some point, but it was probably a few million years ago, at which point, obviously, there would have been some, an incredible watery cataclysm when there was this breach, because the Mediterranean can go down several thousand feet in a lot of places. I don't know if there's any evidence that it was caused by a tsunami. I do know that I think there's a chunk of the Canary Islands that is sort of seismologically unstable, and someone has estimated that if that falls off, a tsunami at least 100 feet high will hit the east coast of the United States.
It's safe to assume, Mark, that wherever Atlantis might be, mm-hmm. something very catastrophic happened.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And fast.
Even, experts who look at this, archaeologists and historians and such, they say, look, if there's one thing we can pull out of this story that we know is true, is that some sort of disaster happened and was passed down to Plato. We may not know the exact details of that, but it was something cataclysmic. It was something that destroyed civilization, and for that reason, it was necessary to be passed down.
And it happened quickly.
And it happened quickly, absolutely.
Didn't give these people much of an opportunity to flee or get away or anything like that.
No. What's interesting about it, I mentioned the city of Heliki earlier that was hit by an earthquake and flood in 373 BC. You sometimes, like before the 2004 tsunami, and I think you've heard this about the 2011 Fukushima tsunami, was, the animals running for the higher ground. Well, supposedly for 5 days before the disaster in Heliki, every tiny animal ran out of town for 5 days before that.
Wow,
so this sort of evidence goes back a long
time. They feel the vibration or something. That sounds like an earthquake.
Yeah, and it was. So, there's these little bits of evidence that when you look at these old stories, you say, wow, that really does ring true.
The Greeks built some incredible classic-looking structures,
mm-hmm.
buildings, sculptures. Might those structures like that be on wherever Atlantis might be and they went down with it? And, you know, so if you can get down there, you might be able to see a 20-foot statue of some type.
Well, it's hard to say because the buildings that we're familiar with, things like the Parthenon on the Acropolis, those are golden age structures, you know, with the classic columns and the triangular pediment. You know, what we may be looking for are, you know, slightly less sophisticated buildings. If let's say, the story of Atlantis is based on this cataclysmic period from 1225 BC to 1175 BC, something happened in there. You know, there are ruins from the Mycenaean era of Greece, which is before what was known as the Greek Dark Ages, when, you know, the Greeks lost written language and stuff like that. They are impressive, but they're not quite the sort of classic Greek architecture that we know from Banks and the Supreme Court and things like that.
Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island. Hello, Tony. Welcome to the program. You're up with us.
Hey, great show. In the Silmarillion by Tolkien, there's a chapter called Numenor, and it's quite like Atlantis, where a giant fleet decided to attack an area that was forbidden for them to go to, and everything was wiped out by a tsunami.
Yeah.
And his tales are based on Norse legends mostly, and he was a genius as far as ancient tongue. And now they've discovered like pyramids under the Azores near Pico Island. Are you familiar with those new discoveries of those pyramids?
No, I don't know anything about that, I'm afraid.
Oh, if you look it up, it's very recent. They've found a lot of pyramids that are similarly aligned to the ones that are in Giza, which are, I think, the Orion constellation.
Oh, right. I have seen that there. I saw that in, I can't remember the guy's book.
Strange structure off the coast of Malibu as well, Mark.
Oh, really? Okay.
Underneath, under the water. It's very strange structure. It looks like you can go in underneath the water, but it's weird. It looks like a convention center that sank to me.
Well, you know, a lot of these ancient buildings absolutely do have solstice alignments and things like that. In Malta, in these temples that were built, you know, between 3600 and 3200 BC is the best guess. You know, there is a doorway where a shaft of light comes through, and I believe it strikes an altar of some sort. On the solstice, on the winter and the summer solstice, you can actually go to Malta and visit. They have a special visitation on that day at dawn. You know, so there could be something to some of these solstice alignments. And certainly, you know, having spent time at Machu Picchu, that's the most incredible solstice alignment.
Why hasn't there been a major scientific exploration to try to find Atlantis?
Well, the thing is, you're looking for a negative.
But these ancient stories, there's always something to it.
Well,
it's like I believe there was Noah's Ark out there somewhere.
Sure, but people have poured a lot of money into looking for Noah's Ark, and they haven't really found anything solid yet. You know, then they say, well, because the boat was made out of wood, and you know, blah blah blah. The thing is, we don't know exactly what we're looking for. You know, unfortunately, so much archaeology. Discoveries are made because people stumbled across things. You know, it's like when people first started coming across dinosaur bones and you know, ancient people thought that they were dragons. You know, you have to stumble across a few things before you can start putting the pieces together. And unfortunately, with Atlantis, you know, you'd have to basically survey the entire Mediterranean, and then you would have to survey a good portion of the Atlantic Ocean as well. And if you take in some of these other theories, you'd basically have to survey the entire ocean bottom. That said, I think, you know, within our lifetimes, we may see some sort of serious, you know, deep ocean, you know, survey being done. And those results will almost certainly pull things up that we never even imagined.
What if it's in the Bimini area, where Edgar Cayce, I believe, thinks it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I tend to discount that theory just because so much money has
been poured. It was Edgar Cayce, Mark.
Well, I know that. I know, but here's a thought. Let's say Cayce was correct, and he said, you know, this would rise again in 68 or 69. It's possible he was talking about the rise again of Atlantis and the culture. 68 and 69 right. is when Donovan writes the song that you played at the beginning. It's when you know, you look in major newspapers like the New York Times and you know, even the New York Review of Books, which is one of the snootiest publications in the world, and they're writing about the search for Atlantis. So it's possible he was referring to this, you know, sort of reawakening to the idea that Atlantis could be found.
We go next to Phoenix, Arizona. Tom's with us. Good morning, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Great show, you guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Very much. Quick question. I want to verify something. Some authors define Egypt, the time in Egypt, as a place where people would go to have some kind of transformational experience. And then they would take that knowledge and go back out to other areas. Is this jive with anything you know about?
Well, I think what you're talking about may go back to, you remember I mentioned Ignatius Donnelly, the congressman?
Yeah.
This is a theory that's known as diffusionism or hyperdiffusionism, which is that some mother culture has a disaster, and then all of these wise people get on boats or whatever and go out and found great cultures around the world. You know, Donnelly believed that Atlantis sank, and then people went off to found ancient Greece and Egypt and the Inca Empire and, you know, basically any ancient society that was advanced. You know, we don't really have any evidence for that sort of thing having happened. What seems to be happening instead is that people, you know, develop things separately. You know, they develop the wheel separately. They you know, develop agriculture separately. So the idea of this mother culture that just sort of spews out people around the world, it doesn't yet hold a lot of water.
The Story of Atlantis. Meet Me in Atlantis. That's Mark Adams' book, available all over the place, of course. I love the cover. Who did this?
You know, I don't know who the artist was. The publisher is Dutton Books, and they do terrific covers. Let me see if I can look it up quickly. But it captures so many of the elements of Plato's story. You know, there's geometry in there. He talks about elephants on Atlantis. You know, he talks about the disaster. And supposedly, the god behind all this is Poseidon, who's there with his trident right there. Julie Munn, I believe. Designed by Nancy Resnick. Illustrations by Julie Munn. So thank you to them. It is a beautiful cover, and I think it really does convey the idea of the book, that people have this obsessive nature, and they go out and they take the clues that Plato gave us, and they, you know, now that they have this technology like Google Earth, you know, they can do a lot of this stuff from home.
Well, they sure can. We will get more calls when we come back, but how long did it take you to study this?
You know, it took me about 3.5 years to write the book, and it took me about 2 years before I could even begin to tiptoe toward trying to unravel this sort of Pythagorean numerology that Plato was dealing with.
And once again, for people who want to email you, they go to your website, markadamsbooks.com, correct?
Correct.
All right.
I'm getting emails right now, George.
Oh, yeah. They love you.
Yeah.
They love you. I'm getting emails about you, too.
Good.
And they are good, by the way. All right, let's come back and take some final phone calls in a moment with you on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about Meet Me in Atlantis. Boy, I think it would be fantastic if they could ever uncover this place. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you, for the first couple hours, I'll be talking with John A. Gotti, the son of the late infamous mob boss John Gotti, and Peter Lance, deal with the devil. And then later on, Richard Belzer joins me, one of my co-authors in the book, Someone is Hiding Something, about the missing Malaysian plane. He joins us live for a couple hours as well. So I'm looking forward to that night. We will be back in a moment with Mark Adams, Meet Me in Atlantis, and your final calls. And welcome back. Mark Adams with us. Meet Me in Atlantis. And let's go to your final calls as well. Mark, by the way, I do want to congratulate you on your work. You're very thorough at what you do.
George.
You don't miss much.
Well, you know, I find that if you come up with an interesting, intriguing idea and just dig and dig and dig, you can find fascinating stuff that also happens to be true.
What's your next mission?
You know, I haven't decided yet. You know,
what's
I honestly can't. Once you've done Atlantis, you're kind of looking down from the mountaintop.
How about looking for the Hall of Records?
See, there's just not that much to go on. All we have are some KC readings.
KC readings, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you know, so there's just not a whole lot of detail to go on.
God, if anybody could find that, wouldn't that be great?
I mean, if it showed up, it would definitely be.
Let's go to David in Spokane, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, David, get us going here. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. George, I just wanted to make a couple of comments when you were talking about why civilizations collapse. I'm kind of an amateur Roman historian. I took a couple of classes in Roman history.
Okay.
And what's interesting, first, you said it was like Rome lasted 500 years. It lasted 1,400 years. When Constantinople fell to the Muslims, there was basically that was not it. There were still even a couple of islands that were basically Roman until they fell to the Muslims too. But as far as the fall of Rome and Greece, what's really interesting is there was a new study that came out, or a new book called Why Civilizations Collapse. And the number one reason why these civilizations collapsed was depopulation. Apparently, when the Romans came into the Greek peninsula and came into all the different Greek cities, some of the Greek cities were deserted. And the Romans, there was no fight, there was no war to take over Greece. They just marched in, and the Romans asked the Greeks, well, where are the people? And they said, well, people here just stopped having children.
Jeez, it's not like they fled, they just didn't populate.
Just, yeah, they were puzzled by it because they didn't even have to make camps. There were so many empty buildings, they just stayed in the buildings in Greece. And then after they conquered Greece, whatever happened in Greece seemed to happen in Rome, because Rome, the families went from large families to your average, your families that had the great villas and estates and whatnot, they would have just two kids. That would be it. And that couldn't sustain the empire, especially with legions. The emperor was desperate for legions, for all the enemies on the borders of Rome. But not only was there a problem with depopulation, but it was a problem with population. Depopulation was caused by two things. It was caused by they were all drinking wine, and the wine was imported in big vessels that were lined with lead.
Ah, sterilized lead, them.
Yeah, lead made them sterile. They just couldn't have children, and they didn't know it because at that time they just didn't have the science for that. And the other reason was the empire, as the empire grew, and it had all these isolated kingdoms and other civilizations. These were isolated civilizations. They had germs and bacteria. And what happened was people started traveling around, and they started bringing all these plagues. And the plagues would sweep through the whole empire, and they would kill as much as 10% of the whole population at a time. So the emperor, and stuff was just doing anything he could for legions, and the civilization stagnated there for a while because they reached a point where the empire was so big they thought, well, there's no need to grow the empire anymore because it became Christianized, and they thought, well, God's coming back, and we're his people now. And
well,
so,
David, after the Romans and the Greeks fell, who replaced them?
The Attica, the Hun, and from the east. They were actually a group of people that the Romans were trying to incorporate into their empire. But for a long story, they were like far above Greece, around north of around Romania, up in that region. And they tried to incorporate them. They were from Central Asia originally. They were going to give them a huge province and Romanize them and stuff, but it didn't work. They incorporated them and used them to fight their wars for them, but as it turned out, the barbarians understood all the Roman weapons and military maneuvers, so when the Romans fought them, these barbarians, they knew all their techniques.
That's incredible. We learn history here, Mark.
I know. Catastrophe comes in many forms.
Amazing. David, thanks. Well done, by the way. Shoreview, Minnesota, first-time caller. Bob's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Bob.
Hi, let me turn my radio down.
Yep, turn that down. And you come back.
Yeah, the speakerphone probably easier to hear.
There you go.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just got home from the hospital, and it was kind of a synchronicity. I have a book, Atlantis, by...
And were you visiting, or were you a patient?
I was a patient.
Were you doing okay?
I'm 85 years old, so I guess I, you know, I can look forward to those hospitals.
Yeah.
Kind of a sudden thing. I was in church, in fact, in class. Anyway, that's not...
Well, you're okay, though. That's good.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm just trying to stay awake. But I have a book by John Michael Greer about Atlantis. I'm just wondering if Mark has read that book or if he's...
You know, I don't know Greer's book. What is it? What is his theory or hypothesis?
Well, pretty much the same, you know, just in great depth about what you say, and it's all hypothetical, I guess, so it can't be proved or disproved.
Nope.
Sure.
Nobody knows.
And of course,
but, you know, an interesting thing is that, you know, Plato's work, the Timaeus, you know, that's all speculation. You know, a lot of people think that you know, this dialogue that Plato wrote, which is the original source of the Atlantis story, you know, a lot of people call it, like, the first work of astrophysics. You know, because he's talking about atoms, and he's talking about the entire universe, and he's talking about, you know, the harmonies and the music of the spheres and things like that, and things that he couldn't possibly have known, he's speculating on. So, you know, I don't think it's in any way a bad thing to speculate a little bit about what Plato was up to in Atlantis.
If Plato did not write about Atlantis,
mm-hmm.
would we have known anything about it by this time?
I don't think so. I don't think we would have any...
Okay. So he was the one.
He is the one. He is the sole ancient source, you know, sole recorded source for it.
So if you got in a time machine, went back and talked to Plato, what would you ask him?
Was it true or not? You know, I mean, what's interesting is that it seems that even, like, right after Plato died in 347 B.C., his students were already arguing about whether he had meant it to be true or not. You know, Aristotle, his most famous student, wrote things, some of which seemed to indicate that his teacher had been telling the truth, others of which seemed to cast doubt on it.
Really?
And there was a student in the next generation named Crantor, who's famous as doing the first great commentaries on Plato's works. And you know, according to lore, Crantor was so convinced that the Atlantis story was true that he sent an envoy to Egypt to try to look for this inscription that Solon had seen. So, you know, the debate goes pretty much all the way back to Plato himself.
This international show goes now to Quebec, Montreal. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, hi, George. It's an honor to talk to you, and I listen to you every night at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
Mark,
yeah,
Mark.
Not bad, not bad. Hey, I don't want to talk about Atlantis, okay? I know a lot about Atlantis. I read books and all that. Montreal, they were digging to make a high-rise building downtown, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as they were digging to make the foundation and whatever, they came upon a village, and they found plates and spoons and this and that, and they brought in the archaeological team to come and investigate, and let's put it this way, construction has stopped. I'm just wondering... Could it be that there are many places like Atlantis or whatever that have not been discovered yet?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's possible that Atlantis or whatever the original inspiration for the Atlantis story was, you know, could be sitting beneath a golf course in the Western Mediterranean, you know. Oddly enough, people tend to zero in on sites for Atlantis where, you know, nothing has been built, but, you know, in the way that the Mediterranean has been built up over the last 1,000 years or so, you know, the chances are that something has been built on top of whatever it is we'd be looking for is very high.
What's more dramatic here, Mark, that Atlantis was a small little island nation that got inundated by a tsunami, or some huge continent that got blasted away by either an asteroid or even themselves?
Well, according to Plato, it seemed to have been both. It was an empire that had conquered much of the coast of the Mediterranean, but it also had this central city with the concentric rings, you know, and guard towers and gates and temples and things like that. The question is, when he says it was destroyed in a day and a night, is he talking about the capital city? Is he talking about the whole place? You know, he says there's this shoal of mud.
And who told him?
Well, according to him, it's passed down, you know, four or five generations from his ancestor Solon.
Father to son.
Yeah.
I've got the story for you.
Well, part of the problem is that in one place he says he remembers being told the story, and in another place he says it, he had an inscription. And, you know, Plato's not saying this himself. He's not writing as Plato. He's using a narrator, a character named Critias, to tell this story. So there's one more level of, you know, removed from a direct narration.
Frank's in New York City. Welcome to the show, Frank. Good to have you with us.
Hi, George and Mark.
Hi.
Yeah, my question, I think it's like a few of them, if you don't mind. Quick, if you know about Lemuria, the other continent in the Pacific that supposedly, I think it sank. The second question, I know, because I'm a Rosicrucian, but I'm not too advanced in there, they have certain records where there were certain priesthoods with certain temples and certain mountains in Atlantis. Does Mark know anything about that? And also, just a quick thing from the previous, I guess, guest with the topic, out-of-body experience. When I had my out-of-body experience, I was 17. I was a bad kid, but it was for a week, and I saw like a blue and white light around my body, and like I heard like a buzzing sound. And I was able to move around, but by thought, and I was like floating like a balloon. So it was kind of like, you know, strange to me, but that's what I saw. I didn't see, you know, the typical, you know, tunnel with the white light and all. I think because I was bad or something. I don't know. But anyway, there's still two questions about the priesthood and also about the Lemuria, please. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know much about the Rosicrucians, so I can't address the,
okay,
the priesthood.
What about Lemuria?
Or the temples. Lemuria can be traced back to a single hypothesis in, I believe, the 19th century, where a zoologist was trying to explain why you saw lemurs on both sides of the Indian Ocean. And he said, well, maybe there was a continent in between, which he named Lemuria. And pretty much every reference you see to Lemuria can be traced back to that hypothesis, which, incidentally, was thrown out shortly thereafter, but the idea lives on.
We need an exciting mission. Maybe James Cameron or somebody could go hunting for Atlantis, huh?
Well, you know, Cameron does have that deep-sea challenge.
He's got that, and it would be a great film.
He just gave it to Woods Hole, so, you know, who knows what could be found at the bottom of the ocean.
Gunner, truck driving in Minnesota. Hey, Gunner, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
You ought to have him on as an interview sometime. He always got good questions for you.
Yeah, he is.
He stole my thunder. I read a book from Ruth Montgomery about the same thing, Atlantia.
Yes.
And the Lemurians, and I was just wondering if Mark knew anything about that. And back to that other guy with the empire.
Yeah.
I think that's what our empire is doing right now.
Exactly, Gunnar. You got that right. Ruth Montgomery, of course, did a lot of great research about a lot of different things, Mark.
Yeah. I'm not really familiar with his work, but it's interesting.
Her work.
Oh, her work. I'm sorry, Ruth. Yeah, you know, don't know it too well. You know, I tend to focus on the people who are using Plato's original work more.
Plato must have been one of a kind during his era, huh?
Well, you know, I got into this because I was writing a magazine story about the greatest thinkers of all time, and every single professor I called up, I said, well, can you give me the top 10 philosophers? And every single one of them said, Plato number one, Aristotle number two.
Plato was 80, died in his sleep, I hear.
I can't remember exactly, you know. I mean, even his death is a little bit murky historically just because it you know, it wasn't recorded.
Well, you know what's amazing? I mean, they talked about the longevity of life
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, if you lived to be 45 during that period,
sure.
That's pretty old.
Sure.
But all these guys lived until they were 80, 83. That's amazing.
Well, you know, Plato was a wise guy.
He probably ate well.
He probably ate very well. He certainly drank very well. He wrote a lot about wine. He wrote about the dangers of hangovers. he wrote on
the wine probably helped him, cleaned out those arteries.
It may have. It may have. Well, you know, Mediterranean diet, George.
You got it. Let's go to Gary in Hawaii. Hey, Gary, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. A question from Mark, and not necessarily Atlantis, but a few decades ago, was there not remnants of in the Caribbean, I believe, and if my memory serves me right, in close proximity to Cuba, some building structures that were
yes.
found underwater?
Yes, absolutely. We had a story on that. Linda Moulton Howe broke it on our show. There were structures outside of Cuba. Some people thought That's where the Soviet Union dumped their missile silos and things after the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. But if anybody went down there, nobody reported on it, on what could be down there. And the couple that was going to go down and try to raise the funds to do that, Zelensky's, I think they were, they never got the money to do that. So there's something off of Cuba, Mark, but nobody knows exactly what's there.
Right. I remember seeing something vague about it. And, of course, there's also the constant search off of the Bahamas that hasn't turned up too much thus far. There's some sort of rock formations that seem to be natural, but some people thought that it was a ancient man-made road. But thus far, it seems to be a natural formation.
And there's that possibility that we will never find Atlantis.
Oh, don't say that, George.
There's that possibility.
It is possible. It's a high possibility.
I hope we find it.
God, I would love to find Atlantis.
But we need a full-fledged mission. Would you go on the mission?
I'd be the captain.
Well, I'd like that. All right, Mark, thanks. And once again, where can people pick up your book, Meet Me in Atlantis?
Any of your reputable booksellers. It's actually on sale as of right now.
I almost said Meet Me in St. Louis.
That's what the title refers to.
I love it. All right, Mark, thanks for being on the program.
George, what a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It was fun. Great program tonight. And tomorrow, again, I'll be talking with John A. Gotti, the son of the late mobster John Gotti. And then later on, Richard Belzer, actor, author, joins me as we talk about Someone is Hiding Something, our work on that missing Malaysian plane. Today, they thought they found a little some kind of napkin or something with Malaysia written on it, but no confirmation on that yet either. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.